Welcome to the Diecast, everybody. I'm Seamus. With me this week is Christopher.
Hello.
And Joshua.
I got rid of the other two.
More like they got rid of us. They're doing cooler things this weekend.
Shut up. They're the ones who don't want to be on our awesome podcast about... what is this podcast about?
They saw that I was going to be talking about Honey Pop, and they were like, yeah, I have to go do something else tonight.
I don't know what you're talking about. Listening to you talk about a softcore porn match 3 game is probably going to be the best thing ever.
So, should we lead off with that? Like, if that's going to be what everybody wants to hear, then maybe we should wait until later and make people sit through the rest of our show, because otherwise they're just going to check out as soon as we're done talking about it.
This is, like, already too much planning.
You're right.
Just go with what we have.
All right,
just
then.
To say not very much.
Yeah, I don't even know what we're going to talk about this week. I hope we can get a bunch of time out of this Honey Pop game. Okay, so somebody bought me Honey Pop, which if you don't know, you haven't seen it on Steam, is, like Josh said, a softcore pornography match 3 game. Somebody got it for me through the Humble Store, and so then I downloaded it, but then it also came with the Steam key, and everybody's like, are you getting the censored or the uncensored version? And I started both up, and I couldn't see the difference, and maybe I didn't, like, investigate enough, but I don't really want to see that part of the game. Also, before, a lot of this game made me uncomfortable. Like, my relationship with this game was, haha, this is so funny and silly. And then step two is like, wow, this is actually a pretty good game. Like, a really good match 3 game. I'll talk about that in a minute. Like, this basically fixes all the problems with match 3. And as far as I'm concerned, other match 3 games are now broken forever, and I don't want to play any of them. And then step three was one of the girls in the game mailed me a picture with her tits out. And I was like, oh, right. That's what you get for playing this.
So is this the censored version or the uncensored version?
Well, that's it. I can't tell. I don't know. They both look the same to me. Like, I ran both versions, and they both showed the same material. So I don't know if it's the, like, censored. They might just be confused because I installed both. And maybe that just set some flag. So I don't know, and I don't want to investigate. So I don't know. It's the answer to that. Technically, I have both versions.
Well, that sounds great. So what did you think of the part where you got a bunch of waifus and other stuff that I presume happens in this game?
It's really weird. Oh, for one thing, okay, that makes me really uncomfortable. The whole waifu thing, like, everything about this, you have
no,
to...
No, really? Why would that make you uncomfortable? I can't imagine.
It feels like if you ever go into a bar and you realize you're in the wrong kind of bar, and you realize, oh, I've wandered into somebody else's subculture. That's what this feels like. I also felt like Steve Carell from 40-Year-Old Virgin trying to watch porn. That it was, like, all awkward and terrifying for him. That's how this felt, too. Like, everything about this felt wrong. And maybe that's just because I'm old and I've never been really exposed to this kind of thing. But I want to say, I should have said this up front. This is not me condemning the game. I've read a few reviews of the game, sort of in preparation for talking about it, and several of them were like, oh, this is disgusting. All you do is leer at women, and you're a horrible person if you like that. And I am not saying that. If you like this, that's absolutely fine. It's just not my thing. I actually really, really hate that sort of play a game and then condemn everybody else that plays the game. Like, don't sneer at people for what they're into. That, I mean, that if you're playing video games, you should know better than that. We got that for 30 years before we went mainstream. Don't do that.
How is the actual dating sim part done? Like, do you play the match 3 and based on how well you do that or which gems you match that gives you stats for the next scene?
Okay, yeah, there's two layers to it. And speaking of offensive, you have some, like, conversation tree with them, and you buy them gifts, which is really uncomfortable. Like, you just, like, just dump a bunch of shit on these ladies so that they'll date you or like you better or whatever. And, of course, that's uncomfortable. And the gifts that you buy are also uncomfortable. Like, you buy them... You can't just buy any gift for any girl. You have to think about the girl, and then what gifts would she like? But, like... Oh, this one's into yoga and spiritual shit, so you get her all these, like, hippy-dippy spiritual knickknacks. But then it's like, there's the Mexican girl, and you have to get her Mexican paraphernalia.
Oh my god,
or from the Mexico.
Japanese girl. So it's like, the Mexican girl's hanging out on the beach, and you just show up and give her, like, a taco and a luchador mask, and she's like, oh, thank you so much. And I'm like, one of them even calls you on it. One of them even says, you are so racist. so the game
is actually self-aware.
Oh, the game is super self-aware. There's some fourth wall breaking. Like, some of the girls seem to be aware that you're playing a game and make references to playing the game. And one of the characters is super fourth wall breaky and even refers directly to, like, meters and menus and stuff like that. So the dating sim is awkward, but when it starts calling you, sometimes you'll say something stupid and they'll call you out on it. Like, the part of the game is you ask the girls about themselves, then they tell you facts about themselves, and then later they quiz you on it and see if you remember. So eventually you've got, like, you know, these six girls and all of them are quizzing you, but the shit that you ask is, like, really awful. Like, so, how big a cup size are you rocking? Like, who would ask that? Who in the world would ask a girl that question? And why would she not punch him right in his stupid face afterwards? So, but this game does that, and then they all call you on it. They're like, what kind of question is that? So what I assume I'm seeing is that these are probably tropes from other games in the genre that this game is embracing and then poking fun. That's the only way this makes sense.
You are 100% correct. That is exactly what is happening there.
Josh would know.
Yeah, as you know, I have a lot of internet fake girlfriends, you know, as I do, and I'm actually a connoisseur of the dating sim genre. I got all my dating sim stuff.
The closest thing I've played to this is I think way back in high school, I pirated a copy of Strip Poker that was like a DOS version of Strip Poker. And it is as bad as it sounds, but the best thing about it was the crappy MIDI music it played, actually. This relentlessly happy, upbeat, chipper MIDI while, like, trying to be erotic. So you'd have really upbeat casino poker music, and then it'd try to be sexy with, like, like MIDI saxophone and that overlaid on top of casino MIDI music. It was fantastically terrible. So that's my barometer of the genre.
That sounds like the most unerotic experience you can have.
It really, really was. It didn't help that, again, it was a DOS game, so it was super pixelated.
Oh, were they actual photographs or drawings?
They were drawings.
Even better. Pixelated
photographs
drawings.
Would be great. Like the fucking, like, 240 by 120 resolution photographs.
Yeah. Wait, I think I see a girl. Yeah, those pixels right there. That's a girl. No, that's part of the background. There's a girl in this. It's like playing Where's Waldo? Where's the naked lady?
It's a Where's Waldo porn game. If you can find Waldo, you get the porn.
There's an erotic scene somewhere in this beach scene. Find it.
I have played a couple of dating sims, like, and they're kind of funny to play for an hour or two. I don't get them. But when I say, like, I don't see anything in the game that's, like, terribly offensive, like, there, you can definitely, like, say there's a conversation to be had about, like, objectification of women and whatnot in games like this, but, like, it's basically porn.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, that's and... like going, yeah, it's like getting offended at that content in this game is like, walking into the bookstore and going to the romantic novels, you know, the bodice rippers, and opening it up and, like, finding the scenes with about, you know, oiled up pecs and thrusting pelvises, and then going, oh, what filth, I'm so offended. It's like, well, then why'd you pick it up? Like, that's what this is for. That's explicitly what this is for. There's a conversation to be had about dumping that content into other games where people aren't looking. But in this game where people are ostensibly specifically looking for that, it would be crazy. That would be like complaining about the violence in Doom.
I don't think anybody goes to the page with Honey Pop on it and clicks the add to cart button and buys it and starts playing it without knowing exactly what they're going to get.
Yeah. I mean, I knew what I was going to get, and I didn't have to play it. You know, this was a gift. I could have, and they were really gracious about it. Thank you, person who gave me this. They're really gracious and said, you know, I know this is probably, you know, you might not want this. No problem. And I sort of, like, out of morbid curiosity, and it felt like a dare, that I decided to do it. So I don't condemn the game or anybody who plays it. I guess I just want to make that super clear, even though the game really does make me uncomfortable. I mean, especially
that is the joke.
Yeah,
you, Mr. Straight-laced family man.
Yeah,
old guy playing the waifu simulator.
That's probably part of why it makes me so uncomfortable. Is they're all anime girls, and they're supposedly all different ages. Some of them are like 18, which is scandalous for me. But then some of them are in their mid 30s. But you know, they're anime girls. They're all triangle heads and dinner plate eyes. They all look exactly this. They don't look the same, but you know what I mean. They're that right. Sort of ageless anime look, where the game can just claim they're whatever. You could randomize their ages all over the place, and it wouldn't cause any problems. So everybody's like, oh, what if your wife finds out? And I was like, I talked to my wife and my daughter about this game because they both play dating sims. Well, my wife and my daughter Esther both really like, not dating sims, like, they like the story-driven visual novel romance stories, okay? That's what they like. They like stories about people falling in love or whatever. They and one of their frustrations is getting through the porn to find the ones that are not porn. And in fact, my daughter, I had no idea about this until I talked to her about this. She got into like dating sims for a while, like a few years ago. She discovered she really liked this kind of fiction, but then ran into a few games that like really traumatized her. And she didn't know at the time how to sort through them and find the stuff that was intended for her, or how to like sort out the stuff that was intended for guys. And I probably could have helped her through that, but I had no idea. She's really quiet and keeps to herself and doesn't talk about her problems, so I had no idea she was struggling with this. So she, you know, I mentioned I was playing this and she like wrinkles up her nose because that she associates it with some pretty bad memories of stumbling into a game. It's like, oh, this is a nice love story. Oh, ow, my gosh, no. but the match 3 gameplay. This is the actual reason I want to talk about this. Match 3 games in my mind are broken. Like, usually you switch one tile with an adjacent tile, right? And that makes a match 3. And then those tiles disappear, more pieces fall down. So in your bejeweled clones, that's how it all works. So the problem is, like, the bottom of the board will eventually get stuck. Like, they're just happen to not be any moves on the bottom two rows, and then you do some on the next row, and then that one gets stuck, and more of the board gets locked up, and you have less and less choices until halfway through the game, you're not even making decisions. There's like two moves, and one of them's obviously better than the other. It's like there's much less, and so people solve this by like, well, here's a power-up you can use to blow up the bottom of the board, or blow up a few pieces, or get rid of all the red ones, or whatever. And that fixes the problem, but it just makes the game super random and chaotic. So you just like work on the bottom of the board and just delete stuff, you know, get rid of tiles and then more fall. And it'll be like a five combo. You did a five combo. And it's like, that was entirely the random number generator's doing. I had no input. I'm just making matches. So that's always really frustrating. And you're usually working against the timer. So it's just this game where random sparkles happen. And that's why I get bored with them. And they don't have the staying power of like a Tetris or even like Solitaire. But Honey Pop, and I'm not suggesting Honey Pop is the first one. It's just the first one I've ever found that does this. Because, you know, I don't play many match three. But you can move a tile anywhere on a row or column. So you can move it in a straight line anywhere. And as long as it makes a match, that's a valid move. So the entire board is always in play. And there's no timer. You have a certain number of moves and you have to get enough points. So it's very much a very slow, puzzly game where you're like, okay, it gives you huge rewards for big matches. Like four is worth way more than a match three and five is worth way more than four. So what you want to do is plan ahead to look ahead. Where will the pieces fall? And then I can use this to set up future matches. And that was a really satisfying puzzle game. Like, I will stand up for that, like, as that is a really good game. And I really enjoyed that. And I wish there was a version of this game. In fact, if somebody knows of a version of this game that works like this that doesn't have tits in it, please tell me about it in the comments. Because I would appreciate that.
Preferably one that has dicks in it instead.
I feel like 10 million is similar, but has a timer, so it's not quite what you're looking for.
Yeah. One of the things I liked is that you can just sit. It's a game where you sit back and think. Well, I don't know. I imagine a lot of people probably lean in, but that's not how I was playing. I sit back and, like, ponder these moves. Hilarious thing about this is that this is you going on a date, okay? So there's always the joke about, oh, men are so bad at expressing emotions and men are so bad at talking. Well, in this game, like when you're playing match three, all the tiles represent emotions and it's what you're talking about on the date. So it's like, oh, here's romantic ones and flirtatious ones and sentimental ones. And you're making matches out of those, and some girls respond to different, like some of them are not flirtatious or some of them are super romantic. So there's usually a tile you kind of like don't bother matching and another one you really go for because it's like worth a lot of points to this particular girl. But I can't help but laugh at the notion that somebody's taken the expressing of emotions and having a conversation and reduced it to this game of pure logic on a grid. And it's almost like a joke about men, you know, it almost feels like it's making fun of guys.
So it actually sounds like this one is like a lot more self-aware than the vast majority of dating sims that I have heard of and the few that I've actually played, which were very much like weird male empowerment fantasy chauvinism.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot in this game that's pretty gross. Just the way you have conversations with girls. Like when they asked, hey, are you outgoing? Or do you like doing outdoorsy stuff? You're not playing a character. You're not supposed to answer like what you actually like or what your character is like. You're supposed to tell them what you think they want to hear, which means you are implicitly lying to all of these, at least half of these girls, because you tell some of them you're an extrovert and some of them you're an introvert, and you tell some of them you love to get to do drugs, and you tell other ones, oh, I would never do drugs. And I love to sleep in and all. I love to stay up and party all night. And then you tell the health food yoga chick, I like to get up really early and meditate. And it's just this, like, in order to do the game properly, you basically have to play this slimy pickup artist lying asshole. But then again, you don't have to do it. It's not like you need to do that to progress. You just get the most points for doing that, which lets you level up your match 3 prowess. But yes, the game has quite a bit of self-awareness. In fact, there's a lot of self-awareness in the game, and it seems to be aware on a lot of levels that a lot of its mechanics are absolutely goofy.
So, game of the year material?
Not my game of the year. But I really admire, like, I always assumed, and maybe this is true, I always assumed that the porno games were, like, really low quality, just because, you know, isn't that what you would naturally assume? Just like when somebody makes a porno, they don't get $100 million of Michael Bay money. They get, you know, however much money it takes to rent a warehouse or wherever they shoot pornos. You know, they're not big budget affairs with special effects. And so I assumed games are similar. And this game is actually really high quality. Like, there's a lot of little touches that showed the people, a lot of really small touches. Even like as you move the mouse back and forth, the background parallax is just a tiny bit behind the model or the character or whatever she is, which moves a little bit different than the board, which gives the whole world this depth as opposed to feel like you're playing against this. This is something even PopCap games have. Like, there's a background of a mountain scene with a colorful bird on it, but it's just a static picture that doesn't move, right? And so after a while, it feels kind of flat. But because you moving the mouse moves the background just a tiny bit, it's not like Geometry Wars where you've got like the camera tilting and rotating all over the place or anything. It's just this really gentle thing that makes the world, gives the scene some depth. Like, if they didn't put that in, nobody would have complained. That did not need to be in part of the game. But somebody went out of their way and programmed that tiny little feature. And there's a bunch of little crap like that that didn't need to be there, except that whoever made this thing loved it and wanted to make the best game they could. And even though I find the art is super uncomfortable for me, I admire the love that they put into this game. Also, the music's incredible. Again, they could have just put a shitty, you know, MIDI loop over this stuff, and I'm sure nobody would have complained. But a couple of these songs were really catchy, and I was like, you know, I wonder if they have the soundtrack available.
Well, that was a weirdly positive segment.
So there you have it, everybody. Seamus Young recommends you go buy porn. No, seriously, be very careful.
This, I know I've this talked porn the game, specifically.
Yeah, I know I've talked the game up, but I don't want you to make the mistake I did, where you're like, "Oh, I can handle a few cute anime girls." The images you will see get pretty graphic, and oh yeah, it's bad. It's don't go in casually. And here it is: once you complete the fourth date with a girl, it gives you no choice. You got to either quit the game, or it puts you into a sex game, where you're supposedly doing the deed with her by playing match. It's just an infinite mode where you just make matches as fast as possible. And that is super goofy. And it doesn't seem self-aware. And I had no idea what I was supposed to be feeling when I was doing that. I definitely was not arousal. It was definitely, that was the moment where I felt like I'd walked into somebody else's subculture. And then it shows you a really graphic image. And I was basically done with the game. I was like, okay, that's too much for me. No, that's bad.
I love how conflicted you are about this. This game is great! Oh, God!
That is exactly my experience with the game. And again, I'm not condemning people that are into this. I'm an old man who isn't used to this sort of thing. And, you know, I've been married for 2 decades. I don't see this sort of thing. So, If you have a different experience, if you like it, that's fine. That's cool. That's fine. But it's definitely made me uncomfortable. And I'm looking for a game that gives me really similar gameplay, and maybe without the sex. So that's Honey Pop. And now you know. All right. I have talked for almost half the show, so somebody else needs to talk. Chris, you saw Ghostbusters.
Yeah, what do you want to know?
Just basically, I mean, everybody was predicting a train wreck, and I have to admit, from the first trailer, it looked awful. Just awful. And then I'm hearing people say, no, the trailer wasn't really indicative of the final thing, and it's getting mixed to positive. So what's your take on it?
Sony should fire their marketing department because those trailers are absolutely god-awful, and the movie is way, way legitimately funnier than those trailers make it out to be. It's not without its own flaws, but just off the bat, do not use those trailers as an indicator of the kind of comedy that's in the movie, because it's absolutely just terrible. Just a terrible set of trailers across the board, and everybody involved in that should be fired. But I guess my overall takeaway was I enjoyed it. I liked the movie overall. It's got some serious structural problems, and it kind of falls apart at the end. But it was funny, and I enjoyed myself through two-thirds of it. And that's about all you could ask for what is pretty clearly a cash-in done because they have the license, and we're going to make this movie no matter what.
That's a huge relief. I'm glad it would have been the worst outcome would be for it to be the train wreck that everybody thought it was going to be.
No, it's not a train wreck. It's what it feels like. I mean, having watched the movie, and I'm not going to actually spoil anything, but just sort of structurally, it feels like they had a lot more traditional scripted humor, and for whatever reason, decided to scrap a lot of the scripted stuff, either because it didn't play well with test audiences, or it just wasn't landing, it wasn't funny, or they just, you know, wanted more improv and decided, screw whatever thing we had scripted, you know, we don't have to do those special effects now, problem solved. But it feels like whatever happened, the last third has so many implied subplots that, like, it provides solutions to subplots that were never introduced. Like, multiple subplots have, like, sort of a this is an obvious culmination of a plot that was supposed to be here. Huh. But instead, the movie is two-thirds, before it reaches that train wreck part, it's two-thirds of getting the crew together, investigating some ghosts, and doing a lot of the tech development, and all of that happens with a little big emphasis on the improv stuff. And that, more or less, is really funny. It lands. If you like Paul Feig's other stuff, if you like Spy or whatever, if you like Melissa McCarthy or you know, Kate McKinnon steals every scene she's in, and then, you know, Kristen Wiig and you know, who I can't remember the lady, Leslie Jones, I believe, who plays Patty. They're all, it's a fantastic cast, but yeah, the first two-thirds of the movie are funny improv stuff, and then it tries to resolve plots that never really develop. Also, the cameos are really awkward.
Do they have some of the old characters show up?
They got back everyone they could theoretically get back. What's his name? Rick Moranis doesn't act anymore, so I don't think he's in it. And Harold Ramis died, obviously, so they have a nod to him, but they don't really have him in the movie. But literally every other major cast member from Ghostbusters makes a cameo.
Even Bill Murray?
Yeah, that guy's impossible to get into movies.
Bill Murray is in the movie.
What?
Bill Murray is in the movie. Ray is in the movie. Dan Aykroyd. Ernie Hudson's in the movie, and then there's some others that I don't want to spoil, but are clever nods.
So that was what I was going to ask: is it a reboot or a sequel?
It is definitely a reboot. It is not in the same universe at all. It's not implied to be in the same universe. It is its own standalone thing, separate entirely.
That's probably
from the original
safest. Ghostbusters. That's safest. That's better.
I really enjoyed it. It was funny. I'm trying to think of what to say other than, because I don't want to spoil anything, because I can talk about specific things, but I know the movie just came out. What else worked really well? Chris Hemsworth actually was fantastic as sort of the idiot secretary. It's nice to see Chris Hemsworth do something that isn't just being the dead serious beefcake guy.
No, he's the comedic beefcake guy.
Well, I mean, yes, he is still playing ostensibly, you know, a big attractive guy, but, like, he's been typecast as this sort of dour, boring,
yes,
generic beefcake. Like, I like Thor, but Thor is kind of the most generic Avenger insofar as, like, I don't have emotions. I just do epic things and say
Scally McPunchman. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the Huntsman, where the Huntsman, he's you know, the big muscle for whatever, you know, evil queen that he's working for in those movies. Or even in, what's the name of the movie? Cabin in the Woods. He was the sort of dull brute teenager. You know, he's always been typecast as that. And it's nice to see him, like...
Kirk's dad in the Star Trek reboot.
That's a cameo role, though. That's not quite the same thing.
Wasn't that his first movie?
I don't think so. I think Cabin in the Woods may have beaten that by a year or two, at least.
Cabin in the Woods was 2012.
Well,
it was filmed like a year before that, I thought.
It's crazy to think about, but Star Trek came out in 2009.
Oh, another thing that doesn't work. The modernizing of the theme song. I mean, that's not really complaining against the movie. That's just Fall Out Boy is not very good at making Ghostbusters music.
But yeah. So what did they do to it? Did they turn it into a modern pop song, or did they dubstep it? What did they do to it?
They turned it into a Fall Out Boy song. I mean, the movie.
Ray Parker Jr. is still around. They could have just gotten him to do it again.
Well, they do. The movie does open with part of the original song in terms of like the dun dun dun, and then you get the laughter, and then the main chorus over the logo. So you do get the Ray Parker Jr. song in there, and there's lots of homages to it. In fact, if there is one thing that kind of is annoying, it is, in addition to the cameos, there's just all this iconography they feel obligated to use and reference. Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is there. He's not literally there, but it's they find a way to bring him into the movie. What else was there? There's things that vaguely look like the ghosts from Ghostbusters 2, the Scolari brothers. There's trying to think. I mean, obviously there's Slimer. There's a lot of instances of the theme song being played in different times in different ways. All the catchphrases are uttered by other characters. Things like, you know, who you gonna call, or you know, all of the one-liners. They do a lot of the fan service-y, I have to say this word because that's what they do in these movies, which actually makes it worse because it really just makes this at times feel like a hodgepodge of iconography. But that you move past it, and then you get back to the funny bits, and it largely just sort of passes as, all right, you had to say the thing. You know, it'd be like making a Beetlejuice movie where you couldn't say Beetlejuice three times. It's like, all right, yeah, you got to do the thing. I got it.
Yeah.
But then you get past it, and then you get back to the funny bits, and it's just slightly jarringly distracting when you go, oh, I get it. You're doing the thing from the thing.
Huh. Well, that overall, makes me happy.
Sorry.
Yeah, Chris, shut up.
Shutting up.
Yeah. So that's encouraging. All right. While we were getting ready to do the show, Chris brought up Steam stats, and I'm sure I've looked at this at some point in the past, but I haven't looked at it in ages. But Steam, you know, has a record of what's out there being played right now, and the top games are like stuff you'd expect, like Dota 2 and Counter-Strike and whatever. But then there were a few games in here mixed in that were really incongruous, like Football Manager 2016, which I've never known a single person that has played this game, okay? I've never met any... The closest I've gotten to Football Manager is that he's one of the playable characters in that Sonic racing game, Sonic All-Stars, which just shows how Sega has, like, no mascots that they can use. So they just put the Football Manager, who doesn't have a name or a character, and he's driving one of their carts. Okay, so Football Manager, never met anybody that played this game, is listed above both Skyrim and Fallout.
Fallout 4, for the record. Not just Fallout.
Yeah, Fallout. Yeah, Fallout 4, which people are still talking, like, I don't know anybody that hasn't played Fallout 4, and I don't know anybody that has played Football Manager, and yet Football Manager is more popular in terms of player count than Fallout 4. Speaking of subcultures, I always thought of Football Manager as a subculture. But this is like, huh, this is like a dominant culture that I've never encountered.
I have occasionally thought about picking up Football Manager because it does sound interesting in contrast to like the other sports game franchises like Madden or whatever that are very focused on like, oh, you're playing the game. You are some omniscient, omnipotent force that is directing your players to do stuff. And Football Manager is, as I understand it, much more about like, you know, putting your team together, managing the finances, and figuring out your strategies for like long term, and not so much about like micromanaging plays in games, which I thought sounded kind of interesting.
I think part of the reason that it's so alien, Seamus, is that it's soccer, and Americans don't play a lot of soccer.
But even at that, I mean, like, on my site, I've never seen anybody refer to this, and we've got people from all over the world on my site, and nobody references this game. Like, isn't that funny that there isn't, like, at least that one guy that's, like, super into to international football that, like, occasionally talks about the... If it's this popular, if more people are playing it than Fallout 4, then shouldn't there be, you know, two or three people that talk about it? Isn't that weird that there isn't?
It is weird that I know basically nothing about it other than that it is a football manager sim. Like, I've never seen criticism about it, or I've never seen screenshots. There's no memes that have come out of it, as far as I know.
Right.
And if there have, they're all internal to that culture.
Well, it is sort of like Madden or other sports franchises that are just like, well, none of us play them, and we don't hang out with people who play them, and nobody on your site is terribly interested in playing.
Put it this way, people that are into Madden hear all about Fallout 4, but people that are in Fallout 4 don't hear all about Madden. Or not Madden, Football Manager.
I mean, I have played Madden. I am not into sports, obviously, but I enjoy a good game of Madden. I have played a lot of the sort of NBA jams and the likes. I've played most sport games in some... I've even played an occasional FIFA. I am terrible at them and basically play two games when my friends come over and then never touch it again. But I have played FIFA games. I've never
right.
played
I didn't, Football Manager. I didn't mean to say like, oh, you've never played these sports games.
Well, no, I didn't mean it like, you know, I didn't think I've never played it, but more like... I know people who have played sports games. I don't know anyone who has played a sports management sim game. To me, that's weird. Like, not weird. I get the appeal of a sports management sim game. I don't know anybody who ever has. And I'm trying to figure out that, like, obviously part of the problem is, again, Americans. But beyond that, I feel like for it to be the 10th, right now it is the 10th most popular game on Steam as we're sitting here. Like, more players are playing that than Fallout or Rocket League or
concurrent
Terraria.
Users, right?
Yeah, current players. Yeah, current concurrent playing people. Yes, but still, it's the 10th most popular game on Steam, and I've never played it.
There, you sure about that?
Current.
So does it have a game in it? Do you watch a football game in it, or is it all numbers?
There are football games in it. I don't think you actually. I'm not sure you actually do anything in them. You might just watch them. I haven't done very much research here.
I've played a bit of Madden too, and my brother is a super fan of American football, and he played a lot of Madden, and he'd play Madden the way you're supposed to play Madden, you know, control the team. But then after he got bored with that, he turned it into Football Manager, where it was just trading players, managing stats. He wouldn't actually play the games. He would just...
It's like Total War or whatever, right? Where you get sick of doing the individual missions and you just decide doing the high-level play.
Yep. And he'd just drop back to the... And so he did have this team that was like 50 years old. It would, you know, all the old players would retire and it's just randomly generated names by then. And, you know, he's playing football in 2050 or whatever.
The other unifying factor in this list is that every single game here is a game that is either a strategy game like Football Manager or Civilization V, or where you've got a lot of replayability and that you can just keep playing different variations of the same gameplay. There's no story mode or whatever. Every single other one on here is primarily multiplayer, except Grand Theft Auto V. But Grand Theft Auto V has a really big multiplayer component. I think that is feeding more into why these are the ones that we see more than, say, Fallout 4 or whatever, where, you know, I'm not playing Fallout 4 regularly right now. I put a lot of time into it, but at some point, you kind of get bored with it, and you stop playing it for a bit. Whereas, like, when I was playing TF2, I would play TF2, you know, every week and not get bored with it for a really long time.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing to keep into account with these. These are not sales numbers by any stretch of the imagination. If anything, they can help model player behavior, but not sales numbers. That said, you can use them to infer the health of a multiplayer environment. For example, I'm seeing that Tom Clancy's The Division has 8,000 players at a peak within the last 24 hours. That's lower than Payday 2 and Left 4 Dead and Dark Souls 3. It's lower than Stellaris. The Division has a lower player count right now than Stellaris, and I imagine it cost not maybe an order of magnitude more than Stellaris to make, but a lot to make. So I imagine The Division is not doing so hot.
Wow.
No, that game, like, completely crashed because of the fact that they made the engine all wrong for an MMO where there's way too many stuff client-side, so you can just fucking cheat with, like, really simple cheats. You can pull up Cheat Engine and literally break the game.
And there's no way to detect it, or at least not an easy way.
Which is, like, incredibly boneheaded, like, what the
How
fuck
dumb
are you guys
do you have
thinking?
To be to make that mistake in this day and age?
You know,
that's
I think
terrible.
A component of it was I don't think the game was originally intended to come out on the PC at all.
Oh, like, yeah.
There was it was originally announced for the PS4 and the Xbox One. It might actually have been originally announced for the PS3 and Xbox 360. That's how long ago it was announced. I don't know. But there was a big petition, like, please bring this game to the PC, and they apparently listened to it and eventually decided, yeah, we can bring it to the PC, and brought it to the PC. But by that point, the game engine had already been, you know, like, all the back-end architecture that you would need to change really early on to fix these problems was already made and put in place, because most people do not have cheat engine-esque cheat software on their Xboxes.
Right.
That said, I don't know if it's doing all that well on consoles right now either.
I know anecdotal, but I know my coworkers that all got together to play it have all moved on to Overwatch pretty securely.
Yeah, Overwatch has completely swept all the multiplayer games from this year. Like, remember Battleborn? I don't.
To be fair, Battleborn never really got a chance.
No.
So this is also hilarious, is how many games, like, in the top 20 I don't even recognize. Like, we are soaking in gamer culture. We talk about games and read about games and talk with other people that play other games that we don't play every single week, several times a week. And yet I've never heard of Clicker Heroes. Never heard of it. It's apparently amazingly popular. It looks like, it's free to play.
It's a clicker.
It's a clicker. But I've never heard of it, and it's insanely popular.
Free to play games seem to be. The other one up there that I noticed was Unturned, with thousands and thousands of players, and it's a free to play zombie game, kind of like a free to play DayZ. And it's kind of got this Minecraft look to it, and I have never heard of it. I have never played it, but apparently it's huge. It's right behind Fallout right now in terms of number of players.
Also, Civ 5.
The first
5.
One I hear... Oh, yeah, well, I mean...
Civ 5 is number
Civ
4.
5. Yeah.
Civ 5 is, like, what, 2 years old by this point? 3 years old? It's old. And no, it's like
6 years old.
What? That can't be true.
It came out
That's impossible.
September 21st, 2010. It is almost as old as Spoiler Warning.
Wow. And there it is in the number 4 spot. Now that's just right now. Did they come out with a new expansion or something? Is there something boosting this game? So this has just been going on.
Civ 6 is coming out in October.
Yeah, because I mean, the impression I got is that the
plays for this game.
The thing I took away from Civ 5 is that it made for a nicer casual game, but it really turned off the hardcore fans, and so a lot of them just went back to Civ 4. So I'm really surprised to see Civ 5 charting like this.
It's actually really weird hanging out in the Civ subreddit and being, I guess, basically what is now essentially an old school Civ fan, because I was playing Civilization 4 back in like 2007. And seeing all of this, like, complaints about Civ, like Civ 6 looks a lot like in terms of gameplay depth and in terms at least from what you can see from pre-release stuff, you know, you don't know, and in terms of art style and you know, general direction, seems a lot more like Civ 4, which really appeals to me because I thought Civ 5 was basically kind of a failure. And it's so weird going to the Civ subreddit and seeing a bunch of people who never played Civ 4 who are complaining about all the stuff in Civ 6 that I'm like, wow, that sounds really good.
This is what it's like to be a fan of the 2D Fallout games.
Yeah.
Oh man, the original Fallouts were so much better, and then somebody jumps in with, yeah, I really liked helping Dad fix his purifier in the originals. Damn kids!
I mean, like, I've played every Civ game except, I think, the original Civilization. I might have booted up an emulator for that at one point. I don't remember. And Civ 4 is still, in my opinion, by far the best one. And it's...
I'm sorry, which one is the best one?
11 years old. Civilization 4.
Yeah.
And it's now 11 years old. The thing, like, the only thing that Civ 5 does that I feel like was superior to Civ 4 was that... like, playing the war game stuff is, like, more interesting than playing with stacks. Unfortunately, the AI is so bad, it can't actually do anything with the hex-based war game stuff, so...
There's actually a really good way to deal with that, is to just be so terrible at the game that... I mean, this is a strategy that's worked for me, to just be really terrible at the game, and then you don't notice how dumb or how bad the AI is, and it doesn't make a lot of units, so it doesn't clog up the board. That really works for me. So have you tried being horrible at the game? This is the counter Dark Souls strategy. Have you tried being terrible at the game?
You joke, but I got to the point when I was playing Civ 5 a lot where I got up to playing Immortal games and winning. And that's the difficulty right below Deity, which is the hardest difficulty possible. And at that level, and I would play the occasional Deity game and usually lose. And at that level, the AI is just so blatantly cheating that you're not like playing against, you know, someone that you can pretend is an equal to you in terms of what they do. They blatantly just, like, they start out with like two settlers and like writing and shit, and all these bonuses, and they have like massive bonuses to production, and they can just like spawn units out of nowhere and all this nonsense. Just because there's no way that an AI using just, like, that a Civ 5 AI using just the normal Civ 5 AI subroutines can actually compete with a player on equal footing. Which is, like, I mean, it's kind of interesting in a sort of, like, puzzle-y game way. Like, I gotta really optimize the order in which I'm putting stuff together and figure out exactly what I'm doing and, like, have my strategy from the get-go. But, like... it's not like playing Civ at that point, or at least like what I want to play Civ for. It's it's much more about just learning how to game the mechanics until you can break everything. Anyway, that's my rant on Civilization for the month, yeah. I guess.
But what you have said about Civ fits with what I've heard other people say about Civ, which is 4 is the great one, and 5 is this weird bastard child of the series, and doesn't feel as... But here it is at the number 4 spot on this...
3 is the weird bastard child of the series. Well, Call to Power is the weird bastard child of the series.
Oh, that's...
Call to Power is the weird, like, wait, somebody else made a Civ game, and there's a bunch of strange shit in it, like, you can make... Like, didn't they have underwater cities or something in that? Or some weirdness?
Call to Power is absolutely the bastard child. I forgot about Call to Power, but I remember those days. Yes. That is the weird...
Civ 3 was also pretty bad.
Civ 3 was... actually, Civ 3 felt a lot like... Civ 5 felt a lot like Civ 3 again to me. I've got this kind of thing in my head where you've got... your sort of Star Trek odd even rules where like Civ 2 and Civ 4 were pretty good and also very similar to each other in terms of what they tried to do. And then Civ 3 and Civ 5 were not so great and tried to do similar things to one another. Civ 3 had a more tactical battle system and it actually had like semi one unit per tile stuff. And neither of those worked out very well for it.
Most of the interesting exploration happens in the odd ones, though. You end up with, like, culture, I think, was the first really introduced in Civ 3, and then it got refined in Civ 4. And then you get this, like, hex grid, which I believe, I don't think Civ, did Civ 4 have a hex grid, or was it 5?
No, Civ 4 was squares.
Right. So Civ 5 introduces the hex grid and moves on to try to defocus giant unit stacks, and then I think it'll be Civ 6 that tries to actually refine that and make it work, in the same way that Civ 4 made a lot of culture and non-military combat stuff work.
Yeah, also...
That's a good way of looking at it.
I personally think Civ 4 has the best soundtrack of all of them.
Well, yeah.
And the best sound design in general.
Yeah, Civ 4 might be like one of the top games. I mean, it's really... Baba Yaga or Baba Yetu or whatever the name of that song
Baba
is.
Baba Yaga. That's Baba Yetu, yes. That was the interesting trivia. That was the very first video game piece of video game music that ever won a Grammy. It won it
that,
because
that
they
makes
realized
sense.
It was a piece of video game music at the time, but...
Civilization 4 also has the best narrator.
Well, yeah, Leonard Nimoy.
Is that Leonard Nimoy?
Except for the expansions where I guess they couldn't get Leonard Nimoy back, so you have like the technology normally just like occasionally like you've got most of the tech that's just Leonard Nimoy doing his awesome Leonard Nimoy voice and narrating stuff, and then periodically you've got Sid Meier, who sounds a bit like you, Seamus, like narrating the technology blurb for technology that was added in the expansion.
Terrible.
It was really weird.
That's terrible. I do not have a great voice for that. I'm the last person I would hire to do voice stuff. Good thing I don't host a podcast. Damn it.
And the really good, encouraging piece of news, probably the most encouraging piece of news that I've heard about Civ 6 is they brought back Christopher Tin. I hope that's his name.
Which is good. Although I don't know if that's the best news, because, I mean, like, that's really good news, but... I'd rather the game be good and have a crappy soundtrack than...
The technology guy for Civ 5, the super old guy voice, always, like, bothered me a little bit. I mean, he was wonderfully performed, but I always wanted to give him a cough drop. He sounded like his voice...
the developer, and I was like...
No. The voiceover guy always made me, like, slightly uncomfortable. Like, it sounded like he was hurting or, like, he needed a cough drop or he had a tickle in his throat. And I was always like, oh, that... It bothers me.
That guy was a considerably less famous actor than Leonard Nimoy, although he also played a Vulcan in the Star Trek reboot, which was about the only thing people talked about with him. It seemed like they were going for low-rent Leonard Nimoy or something. This one is being voiced by Sean Bean. Civ 6. And he didn't die in the
trailer.
So.
Oh, you know what they should do? You get halfway through the technology tree, and then a different person starts doing the voiceovers halfway through the game.
Mid-research, like mid-reciting one of the technologies that you have to research to get to the rest of the tree, like, Sean Bean dies, and then Sid Meier pops in and goes like, yes.
Then he just picks up reading. Yes.
Whenever you finish the Bronze Age, how about that? Like, you get him through the Bronze Age, and then unexpectedly the narrator will shift.
But something I really liked about, like, I mentioned Civ 4, I think, had the best sound design. This was something that bugged me, like, kind of irrationally. It was one of those things that, like, probably I was the only person in the universe that actually cared, but like Civ 4 had a really great ambient sounds. Like, you would like hover over a jungle and it would sound like, oh, you've got a lot of jungle ambient sounds in it.
Boy, it sure is jungly here.
Or a forest, or, you know, near a coast or whatever. In Civ 5, there was very little of that, and the environments all seemed much more static, and like, it got props from some people for having a more realistic art style, but it always felt like everything was just like a very nice looking board game now. You know, there wasn't any movement, the trees didn't sway or anything like that. Just little tiny details that, like, probably nobody cares about but me, but like, that bugged me about Civ 5 enough that I'm kind of hoping they changed it in Civ 6 and put more attention to that.
My wish list for Civ 6 is mostly just more interesting ways to actually run your kingdom and make it feel less like you're a god emperor who gets to decide everything, and more like you run a state that has limitations and rules. I miss that from Civ 2.
They're bringing back, like, distinct governments that actually mean something. Where you'll be able to, like, have... They've split technology into, like civic research that, like, allows you to that I guess you use culture for, and allows you to unlock, like, new ways of governing, new government forms and whatnot, that will replace the old civic system from Civ 5, which were just like RPG upgrade trees. And then the technology system that's your typical tech system, but it doesn't include, like, the old technology stuff where you would unlock, like, democracy by researching, like, liberalism or something like that. That's now, like, stuff like that is now in the civic research stuff. So you can have a nation that, like, or a civilization that maybe doesn't focus that much on technology, but you're still able to keep up with the tech-focused research ones because you've got way better civic stuff. You've got, like, a way more developed government form and whatever.
I do.
So that sounds interesting.
Because it sounds neat.
Yeah.
Also, the way you gain research now, the almost the Elder Scrolls-y way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of the stuff they're doing sounds a lot like stuff they did in Civ 2 and Civ 4. The sort of like refining mechanics kind of thing, which makes me feel like maybe this will be the good one.
I'm hoping, because that would be really good. I like Civ 5 fine. It's just it fell apart in the end game, and all the expansions that tried to fix it.
It was not Beyond Earth or Starships or whatever the hell they've been doing in Firaxis for the past couple of years as far as strategy games go. It wasn't
XCOM.
Overtly bad.
That was a dig at XCOM. I just like the idea that Josh...
I didn't like XCOM 2. I just wasn't going to name it because I know that's more controversial than saying Sid Meier's Starships was total trash.
It was. I played it. And I wanted to like it because I liked Beyond Earth. I liked it. It just was like, I liked it enough to play two games of it, and then I'm kind of done. Like, I didn't. There was nothing. There's not much there to it. Certainly not enough to get me to purchase an expansion pack. Because, like, what I love about Civilization expansion packs is that they kind of introduce some meaningful new mechanics that you immediately understand. Like, let's take Civilization and introduce espionage, or introduce, like, totally revamp the culture so that it's really interesting now. Or, you know, let's introduce the idea of corporations and sort of make the sort of capitalistic battle more interesting. And all those things are cool. And then, you know, Beyond Earth was like, I don't even remember what Beyond Earth's expansion was, but I remember not being very interested in it because
I
it was
didn't
sci-fi.
realize it had one.
Yeah, it was all sci-fi stuff, and I'm like, I like sci-fi stuff, but I don't know. It was already so weirdly sci-fi in terms of like building space lasers to silence the drone worms that are attacking, and it didn't have the world building that Alpha Centauri did, so I wasn't invested in the way I'm like, you know, Alpha Centauri had actual characters. Beyond Earth didn't.
Holy crap, Civ 4 is still $20 on Steam.
Yeah.
And that's just the base game.
We're at about time, but I felt like I was just looking at our mailbag and thinking, oh, maybe we should do one of these. It's been a while. All right, we'll do one.
Just one.
I suppose you've listened to the whole show. You didn't tune out when I stopped talking about Honey Pop. So you know what? You've been a good listener. We'll do one mailbag. Dear Campster, damn it! It's one for, well, at least it's somebody who's here. Dear Campster, do you think the changes Turtle Rock are making to Evolve will help the game's playability and accessibility to a significant enough extent as to help them gain players? Or is it too little, too late? Or even just too late. Sincerely,
Well,
Funkelwrinkler.
I can give some of an answer to this question, which is that apparently the day the update came out that made it free to play, it increased the player base by 1,600%. So
Yeah,
now there's 16 people playing it.
there were
Oh,
supposedly
burn.
when it went free to play, supposedly it was something like 300 people playing it. Now it is, you know, looking at the Steam stats thing we were looking at earlier, it's in the top 20 right now. It's got about 18,000 people
Yeah, it
playing right
peaked
now at
at
Midnight EST.
34,000 today, so 35,000 almost, so you know that's a
It's healthy.
respectable amount.
Yeah, it's up there.
That's
As to whether it's sustainable, who knows? I haven't launched it. I think going free to play, especially for a game that fancy looking, is probably a good-ish decision in terms of, you know, reinvigorating the player base. As far as a
Well, in
business
terms
decision
of like,
goes,
no one was going to pay for this game anymore.
look, I had my own problems with Evolve that no one else seemed to, so maybe I'm not the best person to ask, because like, I actually really loved the idea of the game. I love asynchronous multiplayer, or asymmetric, rather, not asynchronous, asymmetric multiplayer.
You want to play my PBEM Civ 4
No,
game?
we're not going to do that. We're not playing asynchronous. We're playing asymmetric, is what I meant to say. But I never really dug the way the game felt in your hands, because you're dealing with a giant monster with near infinite health that doesn't do a pain animation damage or pain or damage animation, so it often felt like you had no real indicator that you were doing damage at all, aside from the little indicator on your screen, the little X that pops up that says, "Hey, you hit him," which made every weapon feel really ineffectual, because every single one of the humans would just open fire when they would see the monster, and it took everyone's collaboration to take the monster down, which was great in terms of fostering teamwork, but just all the guns felt like crap because you were just like spamming rocket shells and chain gun ammo and electricity bullets into this giant meat shield that would constantly keep moving and attacking. And so I never really liked the core gameplay to begin with, so I don't know if I'm a good person to speak on whether or not making it free is going to suddenly make it take off. It clearly has taken off compared to where it was at before, and good luck to Turtle Rock making money, because I have no ill will towards them, and I'd love to see them make another, you know, asymmetric multiplayer game that.
I have a little bit of ill will towards them for I you know there's a certain Schadenfreude or however you want to pronounce however that's actually pronounced.
How much of that was the developer, and how much was the publisher, though?
Yeah,
Like,
true, but it's really It's really funny that you know, this was the game that had that ridiculous nonsense DLC scheme when it was like in pre-order.
Oh, and now I remember free. That shit.
You know, if they would have just gone with what Overwatch did, they would have made a ton more money. They really would have. Like it, and I really don't know if it was the developer that did this or the publisher. My guess would be the publisher. It sounds like a publisher decision, but like releasing the game and saying that we will keep releasing content for free, come play our multiplayer game, we will not divide everything up amongst players, works so much better than saying all the levels will be free, but you kind of have to pay for the additional monster and hero pack DLCs. So you're not cutting up the user base, you're just limiting the player selection. But that's a really confusing thing to say, because then people are like, oh, but can I not play with the guys that buy the new heroes? No, you can, but you only get them if you do the pre-order, and or at least you only get the first pack of them if you get the pre-order. Otherwise, you have to pay the base game, and then yeah. Like it gets immediately confusing. Just say straight up, heroes and levels will be free for a year, and then we'll release a big expansion in a year that expand stuff, instead of this overcomplicated thing. And that was confusing and dumb, but I still don't know if it was malicious. I just think it was a bad business decision that bit Turtle Rock and sunk the game, but not necessarily a malicious one that was out to intentionally screw people over. It was just a short-sighted, bad DLC plan.
Yeah, sure. I just, like, I don't think being short-sighted and bad is necessarily an excuse for terrible business practices.
Well, it's not an excuse. I just, again, if it's the publisher that pushed it on him, I don't want to see Turtle Rock go out of business. Because they made Left 4 Dead, and there are parts of Evolve I like. I like people experimenting multiplayer games. We don't see that a lot. And I would love for Turtle Rock to continue to exist to make another cool thing that maybe sucks a little bit less or that I like a little bit more than Evolve. And again, don't take my word for it. Lots of people love the way Evolve plays, and there are really, it does do some really cool moments. Like the giant monster versus four little people is the coolest thing. You know, I haven't seen something like that since what, like Giants? And that
I
game,
mean,
probably,
well, Left
bringing
for
up
Dead.
That game probably dates me, but. No, I mean,
Left 4 Dead versus mode was similar to it, although it wasn't like just the tank versus the survivors in Left 4 Dead versus mode.
But even that doesn't quite capture the scale difference. Like to the monster, once you reach level 3, it's a pretty small, tight little cagey map, and you don't have a lot of places to run because you're so huge. Whereas the humans have to really figure out where to track you, because to them, you're this giant monster lost in the jungle, or ice princess palace or whatever it is, where there's multiple levels, lava kingdom. I'm making up terrible names for every one of these levels because I'm a horrible person. But yeah, I dig parts of it. I don't know if it's enough to save the game financially, but it clearly was enough to get people to actually play the game, because 30,000 people on a Saturday are playing it. That's more than XCOM 2. That's more than Tom Clancy's The Division by a lot. That's more than Dark Souls 3, and it's more than Counter-Strike, actually, the original Counter-Strike. And Rainbow Six Siege.
Global
I'm just looking at this
still
list.
Like the number two.
But even Rainbow Six Siege, which is a fairly successful multiplayer game, only had 11,000 people play it today. Total. Or
yeah, I mean,
max concurrent. Not
when was the last time we played it?
We should.
Here's the one that amazes me. We were talking about, boy, I can't believe how popular Football Manager 2016 is. Here's the one that really gobsmacks me. Football Manager 2015, last year's edition, is ranked one spot above Doom, this year's critically acclaimed shooter.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know if it's enough to save Turtle Rock, but it definitely was enough to apparently reinvigorate the player base. So if you're looking for matches, Evolve probably has some cool matches going on.
All right. I think we need to call it there. We'll be right back. Say something widow for the, say something witty for the outro, guys.
I'd rather say something widow.